Yeah, we knocked out the janitor.
We started knocking plaster.
They were doing foot stomping, and the janitor was downstairs on his lunch break sitting at his desk, and we started doing foot stomping. A big chunk of plaster came off and beamed the guy.
The Camden Hall was
midnight. So they forbid us to play foot stomping down there after that.
Was that third floor or second?
I thought it was third floor.
Might have been the third floor. I thought it was the second floor, but I remember it was a long, long stairway going up.
But some of the booking agencies that morphed out of what was at Camden, I can't remember one of the big agencies in town.
Yeah.
When we played there, they would bring in locks and bagels.
And another kid.
Yeah, that was two guys.
Margulies, what was the other
Rick, guy? Rich Margulies and...
And I can't remember what they morphed into a big booking agency here in town.
Yeah.
Just like Bill Deal's thing morphed into Central Booking. Yeah, eventually it did do that, but it was after us.
Did you play the Marigold Ballroom?
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What was that place like?
Packed. Elmer wasn't that good a guy to work for.
He was okay. There was another guy.
Jim had him up against the wall once to get our money out of him.
Yeah.
Who was Elmer?
Another one of those guys used to booking, you know, polka bands and big dance bands, and he'd do rock in the afternoon on Sundays and maybe Wednesday night or something. When
you started giving us some crap, you know, one night about opening the door to unload our equipment,
and he was a union official,
and he got in my face, and it was really in my face. I want to tell you another thing about the union in Minneapolis. Oh, that was really something. You had to audition to get into the musicians union. Remember that union place?
To prove you could play.
You walk upstairs and these floors, and these stairs were so old and creaky, it was like walking back into the 20s. And they had an old out-of-tune piano up there. And up at the bar would be these old saxophone and tuba players and shit sitting at the bar. And you'd have to bring your equipment up there and audition for these guys to prove you were a musician in order to get your card so you could play in town. Oh, God, that audition.
That was their own bar.
Well, I'll tell you,
we supported these guys.
And back then, the union could charge you 10% for every gig you played.
Out of your local.
You had to pay the union 10%.
Yes, which was totally illegal. So finally, when they straightened it out, they ended up making it with 3%, which was still illegal, but everybody went for it. But that the musicians' union was pretty. And then we had to audition for the St. Paul union also. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you what, nowadays, you tell me one band that belongs to a musician's union.
Well,
I'll guarantee you, nobody knows about that anymore.
When we left for California.
We actually joined the union in California, too. And even then, I mean, the guy that ran the union there had long hair, sideburns, sunglasses, and a leather fringe jacket. So it was totally different from Minneapolis.
All right, let's get back to 1964. What other local bands are playing around at this time?
Yeah, well, we didn't know them well yet, but
we were the big three: us, the Avantis, and the Accents. We even sponsored a race car.
Yeah.
I don't recall if Del Counts were around then. Were they?
Oh yeah, Del Counts, High Spirits.
It was the Avantis, the Underbeats. The Avantis, the Underbeats, and the Accents.
Yeah.
But then there was the Chancellors.
Yep. From St. Louis Park.
Del Counts. But they were already, these guys were kind of like second wave. The first three that really hit it was us, the Trashmen.
All those other guys were maybe 5 or 6 years younger than we were, too.
Right.
Second wave, when we were out already playing, they were just getting started learning, I think. They were a few years younger than
me. And that seemed like a lot of years then.
Did then, yeah.
Now, you know, it's just like the blink of an eye now.
Yeah.
You got to know the Accents.
We hung around with the Accents and the Avantis.
That was our crew.
I hung out with Tom and Greg. We were like best of buddies. We sang together. We'd go to each other's houses and play songs and sing with each other and everything.
You guys are how old when Foot Stomping comes out on the radio?
20.
Yeah. Does this elevate you to local rock star status?
No,
we're just having fun.
That word didn't even exist then.
Making stupid money and having a good time playing what we wanted to do.
Loving the music, loving the guitar, loving them drums. Just, you know, it was just amazing.
We were
loving
playing
the gig. We
music.
Love the gigs. And we love the gigs.
Donnie, you once told me you would describe the early sound of the Underbeats as gut bucket.
Yep.
What does that mean?
That's roots. They call it roots music now.
Yeah,
we call it roots. We were dirtier than just about anybody.
He would come over to my mom's house. We'd do hillbilly songs till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Bluegrass.
Yeah, drink muddy water,
and
sleep in a holler log.
Muddy water stuff like that was Grandpa Jones stuff like that. That was, and we come up with the damnedest things, but it wasn't the stuff you hear on the radio.
We made it rock.
Yeah, and we, you know, we did a lot of songs that were just earth music. And
nobody
it just
heard of.
Felt really good, and we, yeah. you know, we do our rock and roll thing to them. When, you know, as good as we could be at playing them things, we did. You know,
I think Rod had the only Howlin' Wolf record in existence.
Might have, yeah. yeah.
And but it was that, so scary.
You, remember,
was,
you guys remember Cleve? You know, he yeah. wrote it for. Oh, yeah. Cleve was the guy that turned me on to all that stuff. The first yeah, wow. Dylan album, uh-huh. Howlin' Wolf, and he we'd sit in his basement. Back in high school and listened to all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're on to the next 45, which is Sweet Words of Love, yep, back Jim, with Andy Jim wrote the that. Dog.
Yeah.
This Jim wrote that.
Is this the first song you wrote, Jim?
Yeah, the first two that I wrote.
First
yeah.
original? Sweet Words of Love comes out on Banger. That's another Garrett
yeah.
label. And what happens with that? More airplay?
Yeah, we got... that went into like a four or five state regional. That got up to three or four.
More popular than Foot Stomping?
Yeah.
It might have been, yeah.
But the thing is, there was a really a lack of any kind of national interest going into states, especially like Minnesota. You know, that just wasn't like, you know, being from Chicago, being from New York or Miami or anywhere south, you know, or, you know, even Richmond, Virginia, for God's sake, had more going on than Minneapolis. I mean, first of all, try and put Minneapolis in a song. Oh, I'm from Minneapolis and I got the blues. It just doesn't work. You know, it's just a bad place to be from, I guess. I don't know. Was this, I'm not knocking Minneapolis at all. I mean, you know, I love the joint, you know. But
was Sweet Words of Love inspired by the Everly Brothers?
No. Stop that. Ever say that English?
There was certainly Everly Brother influence.
I mean, I have English friends, so I'm not going to say anything. I would say Everly Brothers more than anything. Or
I thought it was Buddy Holly influenced all of
yeah, that. Yeah, maybe. There yeah. you go. Yeah, I'd say more than anything, either Buddy Holly, Everly Brothers. I've always loved the other brothers, they, you know.
Now, you told me a story in the past about when you opened up for the Everly Brothers.
Oh, we did that three or four times. Yeah.
Okay, and they heard this song. What happened?
I think Don and Phil, no, but they had another guitar player, not Sonny.
Oh.
Sonny Curtis.
Yeah.
And Don asked if it would be all right if they recorded that song. And this time I thought, yeah, gee, that'd be swell, but I'd sure like to see what ours does first. So Sonny gave me his card and everything, and I was to contact Sonny, you know, when this whole thing ran out. And it turned out by the time all that ran out, I got drafted. Mm-hmm. So that kind of stiffed that, and I being patriotic at that time, which everybody was, you know, so that kind of put an end to that. But that, to me, was such a compliment that they would even consider doing that song. Mm-hmm. But we ran into, you know, that everybody's known then. And then once in Gypsy, even, we played a festival. God, it was somewhere in Iowa, too. I'll never forget it. And the Everly Brothers were getting up on stage, and I just had to go up and just say hey to Don. And he actually remembered me. And God, it just did my heart so good. Yeah, just,
they're both good guys.
I just admired those guys. They're just amazing.
So you're on a streak here. You've got Foot Stomping, your first hit, Sweet Words of Love is on the radio. And next up is Little Romance, backed with Broken Arrow.
Okay. Okay, Broken Arrow was a Chuck Berry song, which is a very obscure song.
Mm-hmm.
And probably could, well, I don't know if it'd be a hit anymore. It's kind of dangerous, kind of, would you say racial?
Mm-hmm. Broken Arrow?
You're writing a line these days if you do anything that's...
Not politically correct.
And Little Romance is...
Little Romance. That was kind of a takeoff on a song that Chuck Berry had done called Man and the Donkey.
You wrote the song.
I didn't write Man and the Donkey, I wrote Little Romance.
You wrote Little Romance.
Okay, but the problem with Little Romance is, do you remember Fats Domino had that one song, I got a whole lot of love, sure. And I got a whole lot of... to do, he does the click click thing. So I figured, yeah, that's a good little thing. So we did in Little Romance, a little too. And because of that, it was too sexually suggestive. They wouldn't play it.
Ouija or KDW?
Yeah.
None of them.
I couldn't figure it out. Just got a little too. I mean, that could have meant a little.
Anything.
Sugar loaf. Or it could have meant.
So that kept Little Romance off the.
Yeah,
off
and
the radio
to me,
stations?
I think Little Romance is one of the neatest songs that I wrote, and I think at that time it could have just been a monster. But then again, you got the fact of living where we lived,
opposed to living in Los Angeles or Chicago or New York or, you know, or Nashville.
All these 45s are recorded at K-Bank?
I think so.
I think that's what I recall.
When, didn't we do some
actually,
stuff at Dove?
The next well, one later? No, later. Yeah. Because yeah, the first Footstop, and I don't think was even at K-Bank. Weren't we in Garrett's basement across the street?
Garrett's basement.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah. I don't even know what kind of recording studio that was. And then we went to K-Bank.
God.
So yeah, Footstop and wasn't K-Bank. It was in the
he
basement.
He had an Ampeg 2-track.
Yeah, he so might have, yeah. But then the other stuff, we went across the street to K-Bank.
Yeah, we went upscale then.
Yeah, I went to the real studio.
Yeah, the real studio.
So Sweet Words of Love was at K-Bank.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
But Footstopping was at George Garrett's basement?
I think so.
Could be. Could
so
be.
Was Route 66. I think they were both done.
It all seemed very spectacular to us.
It sure did, yeah.
Okay, next is Our Love with JoJo Gunn. What are those two songs about?
JoJo Gunn, of course, is Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
Our Love. Problem with that is... For some reason, they only brought up the harmony and didn't even bring up the lead vocal.
Which song? Our Love?
No, the JoJo Gunn. I thought we did a terrific job on that. I mean, nobody can outdo anything that Chuck Berry did on his recordings, okay? But you can respect the song and try to do it again so the mm-hmm. public can hear it. And that's kind of what we tried to do on that one. And I thought we did a pretty damn good job of it, but the mix came out. Well, all you could hear was they did a two-part harmony, and all you heard was the high harmony, which to me just totally said, what were they thinking?
Our Love, was that an original song by you, Jim?
Yeah.
With this record?
I don't believe so.
What time?
That's about the time I got drafted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one other on there I don't know if you have, is that Footsteps. You don't have that, do you?
That was done at Dove, wasn't
Calvin
it?
James
that might have been done at Dove.
That was done at Dove with Pete Steinberg produced that.
Pete did? Hmm.
But that's one of the better things I've ever done. But I didn't even know that it had been released until I was advanced infantry training at Fort Polk, Louisiana at Tigerland, where they called me into the CO's office one night, and I thought, oh, here we go. They're going to take my guitar from me, and I'm going home. Either I'm going to jail or I'm going home. And I go up to the desk, and the sergeant holds up a record. He says, is this you? I said, I don't know. So I look at it here, and it says Calvin James, and the Haymarket Riot Footsteps. Yeah, I guess that's me. So he says, bring your guitar into the other room. So I sat up all night with all the drill sergeants, singing songs, getting to know them all. And at the end of the night, the guy said, well, I'm sorry, Jimmy, but you are going to Vietnam.
What year were you drafted?
I was drafted in 1966.
Okay, let's back up to August 21st, 1965. The Beatles come to town. What happens?
We played in the hallway, and I'm not real proud of it.
With what other bands?
I think the Accents and the Avantis.
TC Atlantic.
TC Atlantic. And they use this in their resume. I've never even mentioned this to anyone unless someone like you brings it up. To me, it was embarrassing.
I'd forgotten we even played there. I really
didn't. Yeah, we really didn't want to do it. And to me, it was like humiliating. It was like playing in the hallway.
We were almost leaned on to do that.
I don't remember them being that good either. The Beatles are the Beatles.
Ray Callahan brought the Beatles in. And he probably had a partner, but he brought them in. And the Met Stadium had a union minimum. And so he had to hire all these musicians to make the union happy. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't play out on the field. We couldn't open for the Beatles. So he stuck everybody in the concourse around the...
The Beatles toured with their own opening acts.
Not then.
I don't remember that.
No, that was just straight up. The Beatles came on, and that was it.
They were on stage for 45, 50 minutes, and they were gone. Yeah. Taken out in laundry trucks.
Yeah.
In order to escape the fans.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What did you think of the Beatles when they came out?
Who knew? I could hear screaming, that's all. They went on, it was solid girls screaming.
Yeah.
And I think they were very hoarse.
Yeah, I remember they didn't sound very good that night.
Mm-hmm. No.
Could they?
But how did the Beatles impact the local music scene?
Oh, the big
They ruined it.
How?
Well, they ruined the Trashmen.
I don't know.
It was Ricky Ticky.
God love it. McCartney's written some fantastic songs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lennon wrote some fantastic songs. That's it.
Did you guys ever go see Chuck Berry live here in town?
Yeah.
I never heard of him.
I've heard Chuck Berry two or three times.
Rod, where did you see him?
A lot of different places. He played a couple of outdoor concerts that I remember, and he played one indoor concert that I heard. I don't remember where. Funny story, and I don't remember the musician, but a guy that I know, one you guys know him too, backed him one night, and it was like Minneapolis Auditorium. Got there, he's ready to go, he's got his guitar on, they're all standing backstage, and he says to Chuck Berry, Mr. Barry, don't you think we ought to talk about what we're going to play when we get out there? And he looks at him and says, Chuck Berry looks at him and says, we're going to play Chuck Berry songs.
Hi, Ray, did you ever see Chuck Berry live?
I never did. No.
We turned down a gig to play with him. We didn't want to do it. And so some other local guys, Jerry Sievers, went and took pictures for us so we could.
I've always admired Chuck Berry. He's the guy that inspired me to play the guitar. But everything I've heard from people who have seen him, it just made me not really want to see him. Cause, I mean, the thing is, if I could sit in a room with him for 10 minutes, I'm sure, you know, I could get that out of him. It seemed to me like he recorded those songs, and it's not that he didn't realize what he'd done. It's that he didn't feel that he had to reproduce it again. And to me, I would have loved to seen him play the way he played on those records, but I don't think that ever happened.
Some of the things that you
I'm
see
not saying
him
anything
on
bad
videotape,
about Chuck. I mean, you know, I'm saying,
you know, some
Chuck
of his performances on TV look pretty exciting.
Yeah,
I wouldn't ever. Yeah. We saw those; they were great because he knew.
But,
he was
but you could
the
tell, man, that he was cajoling people a lot of the times. He was playing what he knew all the mooks wanted to hear. He didn't really, you know, he wasn't playing for musicians. First of all,
you never heard him with a good band because he had pickups all the time.
Yeah, he never had a good band.
It would it be fair to say Chuck Berry was a big influence on the Underbeats?
Amazing. He was like,
that's why I wouldn't go hear him.
80%.
I didn't want it spoiled. Yeah.
He was a big influence on everybody who plays.
One time, me and Russell, this is when we first started the Underbeats, before we even called the Underbeats, me and Russell, it says Chuck Berry Freaks. We go, well, let's call down to St. Louis and see if we can get a hold of Chuck Berry. So we called information down there and we talked to three or four people. Finally, we got kind of close to Chuck. And this woman said, you guys don't want to talk to Chuck. What? Believe me, you don't want to talk to Chuck. So finally, we hung up the phone. We looked at each other and we were like, oh, man.
Who did you get through to?
We got pretty close to the management company. You young fellas up there from up north up there. You really don't want to talk to Chuck.
He got through to long-distance information.
Yeah.
I heard Bo Diddley play live in a club on the Midway area. He was great live.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people. Stanley played with him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, Diddley cooked. He was really good.
So before you're drafted, do you do Book of Love and Darlene the Rain, too?
Yeah.
And I Can't Stand It and Shake It for Me? Those are both 66. Right.
Can't stand
by
it.
By then, jeez, boy, Rico was in the mess. Man.
Yeah.
And I Can't Stand It.
I Can't Stand It was a... I really couldn't stand it.
That had horns in it, right?
Yeah, you bet. Too many.
We were influenced by
it. It was like
Flippers.
Every musician in town ended up being on that record. And like, and I'm thinking, what happens if that's, you know, if that should become a hit? What do? That means we got to hire horn players?
Had you seen the Flippers?
Oh, yeah. They were friends of us.
Yeah.
Good friends.
Yeah.
Where'd you first see him?
Prom.
State Fair. Oh, yeah, maybe the prom. They were at State Fair a lot.
Yeah.
But they were pretty much a show band. Yeah. You know, we didn't really want to compete with that.
Didn't want to, and they didn't they didn't look at it as just competition.
No, a whole different thing.
Did you guys play the prom?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Yeah. I got stories in that one.
Let's hear one.
Jules Herman.
Big band?
Big band. We used to do Battle of Bands with them down there. They'd play a set.
You did Battle of the Bands
That
was the prom.
They'd play a set, then we played a set.
Yeah.
Well, they did the first set. We did a set. Then they were going to come back out. The leader of the band says, do you think you could sit in with us? No. I said, what do you mean?
Play bass.
To play bass. Mm-hmm. I said, why? He says, our bass player's so drunk he can't get off the bench and back. And George Erickson, my guitar teacher, said, you know how to do this stuff. You know how to read charts. Mm-hmm. So will you do this if you... I said, you got the charts? He said, yeah, look over the piano player's shoulder. So I rolled my rig across the stage, sat in with the band, and the band just loved it. They were just like, yeah, you can hear the bass. Thrill of a lifetime.
That was
playing
a
with
big
band.
They were doing like, you know, In the Mood. And
big horns, and I knew how to do that stuff because of the lessons.
And they were total anti-rock and roll.